we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, July the 27th, 2018. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
So we do have a special show for you today, and we're going to get right into it. For today's feature interview, we are thrilled to present UK-based animal activist Earthling Ed, who is here in the studio with us as he spends the last week of his North American tour in Vancouver, BC. Ed Winters is known all over the world for his engaging and inspiring messages to communicate a more kinder existence for all beings. Earthling Ed is the co-founder of the UK-based animal rights organization called Surge, which is a creative grassroots group dedicated to making a world where compassion towards all non-human animals is the norm. Earthling Ed engages in a variety of forms of activism and is most widely known for his street activism, in which he converses with members of the public to create positive dialogues and find common ground. Ed also produces free resources such as a 122-page ebook called 30 Non-Vegan Excuses and How to Respond to Them, and he has made a documentary film entitled The Land of Hope and Glory, which brings to light the abuse and exploitation in the animal agriculture industry in the UK. Ed is here today to speak with us about some of the work he does and to reflect upon the animal rights movement now in 2018 and in the future. Welcome to Animal Voices, Earthling Ed.
Thank you so much for having me. So nice to be here.
Yes, I hope you're enjoying Vancouver. This is your last leg of your North American tour here in Vancouver. You were on Vancouver Island last week for Vegetoria. So how are you liking BC so far?
I love BC. It's a beautiful place. The nature's wonderful. The community here is amazing. The food is so good as well. The vegan food. Like, what's not to love about BC?
Oh, yeah. You're staying in an Airbnb, I think, right near Virtuous Pie.
Which is dangerous.
How many pizzas have you had?
In two nights, I've had two pizzas. So.
Oh, and 100%.
We have the same favorite, the CBR pizza. Everybody go check out Virtuous Pie vegan pizza.
I'd like to start by learning your story. You haven't always been a vegan. In fact, it hasn't been that long. What was the catalyst for your journey that has taken you to where you are today?
I mean, I think it started 4 years ago, and it's funny because I'd never really been would have contemplated veganism. Never. It was never something that was on my radar. But 4 years ago, I came across this story, and it was about a truck carrying 7,000 chickens crashing on the way to a slaughterhouse in Manchester in England. And I came across this story online. It was on the BBC News online, and I remember reading it and feeling full of horror about how these animals were suffering. And 1,500 of the animals died on the impact alone of the crash. And actually, there was a little sanctuary nearby where the crash happened. And the sanctuary owners weren't vegan at the time, but the incident made them go vegan. Anyway, we visited the sanctuary back in February this year, and they had pictures from the crash. And it was horrific. There were animals, they had broken bones, broken wings, their combs were hanging off, their beaks were hanging off. They were alive, suffering. She showed me pictures of these animals who you could see the bone through their face, but they were alive, and it was really, really horrific. I didn't know about the brutality of it in that moment, but the words the journalists were using were enough and emotive enough to make me realize that something here was terribly wrong. And I thought to myself, why? I'm being such a hypocrite because I'm feeling sorry for these animals who I'm acknowledging are suffering and have the capacity to feel pain, but in my fridge is chicken. Breasts and chicken flesh and KFC. And so that made me go vegetarian, that realization. And then about 8 months later, my partner Luna made me watch Earthlings. I say made me, she encouraged me to watch Earthlings. And after that, that was a simple choice to go vegan because I was like, wow, this is huge and this is serious. And the magnitude of what we do to animals is far greater than I think we even realize today.
Mm-hmm. What a powerful documentary. It is the vegan maker, if not the activist maker, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you're the co-founder and co-director of the UK-based organization called Surge. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we set this group up 2 years ago, June 2016, and we kind of wanted to have like a grassroots community building organization that did activism, but also brought vegans together and encouraged them to become active and speak up and use their voice. So that's kind of what the aim was when we first set it up, and we do an animal rights march in London, and it's taking place this year on the 25th of August, and there's 20 other cities globally taking part. We do protests, we do demonstrations, we do some campaigns, we do a whole range of different stuff. Basically, we're just trying to fuel the movement as much as possible and build a sense of community in the UK and indeed as far as we possibly can.
So you and Jen have something. You both do activism with vans, which I think Jen calls vanivism.
I'll have anything vism, Tinder vism, whatever.
can you tell us a little bit about the big vegan activism van?
Yeah, so we produced a documentary last year called Land of Hope and Glory, which is an expose of UK animal farming. And we wanted to take the documentary round to universities in the UK. So we came up with this idea of having a van, which was kindly donated to us. And we got it wrapped with lots of vegan messages and vegan statistics, you know, our animal exploitation statistics. And so we for 7 months, we drove around the UK visiting universities, doing campus outreach with the students and teachers, screening the documentary. We gave speeches and such. And it was just a way of traveling as a group together. With the search team, traveling with the documentary, going as far and wide as we possibly could across the UK, spreading the vegan message and just sharing the truth with people who need to hear it.
Yeah, so Jen, you recently watched The Land of Hope and Glory mm-hmm. as research for this interview. I've seen it as well, and you have some questions for Ed about it.
So for our listeners that may not be vegan or may not know, the Earthlings documentary is probably the most famous animal rights documentary. It's 10 years old now, and it shows undercover footage of animal use operations, anything from slaughterhouses to leather production to training elephants in the circus. And a frustrating thing for a lot of activists is they'll get someone to watch it, and that person will dismiss the entire film by saying, that doesn't happen in my country. And I especially hear this from people who are from the UK. And I've been to the UK, and I can understand how they think with all these grassy farm fields, that's exactly how it is for the animals. But it's not. So you made The Land of Hope and Glory.
Right. I mean, it's kind of funny because people look at the UK and say we have really high welfare standards. And technically, in the scheme of things, we do. We're rated A for welfare. Mm-hmm. But then you watch the documentary and you look at the footage and you realize what a scam welfare is and how it means nothing for these animals. So mm-hmm. there is this idea in the UK that, oh, these animals have lived great lives. They're really happy. And then they go to a slaughterhouse and they're killed just humanely, you know, with mm-hmm. really great practices. And the farmers love their animals like they do their children. And we were just getting sick of hearing it because, yeah, Earthlings, people go, America, you know, America's mm-hmm. the problem. America mm-hmm. is industrialized farming. Nothing like that happens here. And we want to set the record straight and show that actually it's just as bad here as it is anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, I remember a few haunting scenes from your film as well as from Earthlings. Ironically, the most haunting ones for me are the ones that are labeled as the most humane methods. Isn't that strange? So in Earthlings, it was the halal kosher slaughter. And in yours, it was the gassing of the pigs that really stuck with me. Do you want to describe that process and why that's considered humane?
Yeah, so across the Western world, the most humane method of killing pigs by the industry is gassing, using carbon dioxide. And what happens is they load two or three pigs normally into a gondola, into a metal cage, which is dropped into an abyss, which is filled with, I think, 80% CO2, something like that. And the aversive gas burns the animals from the inside out, burns the moisture. So their eyes, their throat, their lungs, it burns them from the inside out and causes them to asphyxiate and die. And it can take up to 30 seconds, and it's horrific. I've been by slaughterhouses and listened to these animals scream as they die. And the reason they say it's humane is because the animals can be killed together. So they go in together. So rather than just being one by one, it's a couple of them at a time. And that supposedly makes it more humane. But really, it's just an easier way for the industry to kill the animals. And just to say really quickly that there is another gas that the industry can use. And I can't remember the name of it, but it wouldn't be aversive and it wouldn't cause them pain. I mean, of course, it would not be humane because they're still having their life taken from them needlessly, but it would not be as painful. But the industry won't use it because it's more expensive. So when they say humane, it's always profits first. You know, mm-hmm. there's nothing humane can ever happen in these animal farming industries.
I often say to people, animals go into a slaughterhouse alive and screaming and come out chopped into little pieces. And what is humane about that?
Yeah, exactly. People go into a supermarket and they buy these products that are wrapped in plastic and pretend the blood isn't on their hands. But mm-hmm. we all have that blood in our hands, whether we buy it in a supermarket or a restaurant or if we kill the animal ourselves. It's all there for us to take the responsibility for.
So I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about, there was over 100 undercover investigations that took place for the making of this film, The Land of Hope and Glory. It's not just like it's an isolated farm, which I'm sure is why you did so many undercover investigations, because that's one common argument as well, is that, oh, but that was just a bad farmer and the conditions that these animals are found in were just terrible. I'm just wondering if maybe you can speak to some of the commonalities that are found. Maybe you could speak about that, just the breadth of, this is like one after another after another.
I mean, this is a really good point, and it's people, sometimes these exposés come out and people will go, oh, well, that's a bad farmer, that's a bad farm, that's a bad slaughterhouse, the government will do something about it, which of course they never do. And what we wanted to do was show that actually the abuse of animals and the exploitation of animals is systematic, and it's not just one area or one farm or one practice, it's the system as a whole that is inherently exploitative and cruel by nature. And so that's why we wanted to show as many different facilities as we possibly could, because we also just want to show standard practice, and it'd be easy to find really horrible, gory bits, and of course we did include some of those where it's stuff that isn't necessarily deemed legal or wouldn't be, you know, lawful in the UK. But what we want to show mainly was just what is condoned and what is considered legal and lawful and what people partake in. And so we showed, you know, footage of cows being forcibly impregnated, of their babies being taken away from them, of animals being gassed to death, of animals, you know, being alive as they are, you know, have their throats cut. All of these things are lethal, lawful and condoned in the animal agriculture industries worldwide. And that's what we wanted to show people, that this isn't just a legal issue, this isn't just a bad farmer or a bad practice, the whole system is rigged in favor of an industry that wants to exploit and harm animals, and we all have to take responsibility for the fact. It doesn't matter if it's local, organic, free range, high welfare or factory farming, those labels are irrelevant to the welfare and well-being of these animals who suffer equally in all of these places. And it's not about, you know, saying, well, this place is worse than that, it's about acknowledging that it's wrong, it's just completely wrong and therefore should be abolished in its entirety. Not, you know, no, bigger cages aren't going to cut it, you know, a quicker killing time isn't going to cut it. These things are not relevant and not things we should be campaigning for, and we have to show that this abuse is not isolated, it happens everywhere and needs to be abolished completely.
Mm-hmm. This film was only released last year in 2017. You've been showing it, as you said, at multiple universities in the UK. It's also available for free on YouTube and has received over 192,000 views on there so far, in addition to your live screenings. So I'm wondering if you can speak to us about what the response has been on the film so far. And from what I have been told, the animal rights movement and veganism in the UK is developing at a rapid pace, with 7% of British citizens these days identifying as being vegan. Can you speak on that as well?
Yeah, so the film, we were really pleasantly surprised by how well it's been received, and actually by the number of messages we get from non-vegans who are vegan now, but when they watched it, they weren't, and they're shocked, and they say, we had no idea, we didn't know, like, so thank you for making this, because it's shown us the things that are hidden from our view. And that's what's been really rewarding to see. And we did these screenings at universities, and people would come along, and afterwards they'd be like, you know, we had no idea about this, and mm-hmm. thank you so much for bringing it here, because now we can make conscious decisions and we know what it is that we're supporting. And, you know, it's so important to note, these industries have vested interests, they want to make money from us, so they have to sell us a product we want to buy, and that's why they don't show us the truth. But when we show people the reality, it has an incredibly profound effect on them, because they realize they've been lied to. So yeah, we've been really happy with how it's been received, and the animal rights movement in the UK is booming. Like, it's so exciting to see, and I'm kind of getting a bit touchy about getting back there, because I want to get back into it and get back into what's happening in England, because it's really wonderful to see. And there's that statistic saying 7% of people in England or the UK in general are now identified as vegan, and I always take these statistics with a pinch of salt, because I don't know how confirmed they can be. However, what that clearly shows is the movement is growing quickly, because the last one said about 0.5%.
And in comparison to Canada, there was just a study done that says it's like 2 to 3%, so that's why 7% is mind-blowing to me.
It's huge, and everywhere you go now, veganism is a topic of conversation. It gets mainstream media attention. There's people debating on, like, some of the most, the highest watched live TV channels, you know, and debates and stuff. People have vegans on there, and it's a topic of conversation that has been had by everyone at the moment. The supermarkets are filled with vegan products. The restaurants, the supermarket chains, everything is just talking about veganism now. So it's growing quickly, and I think we will be the first, or one of the first, at least in the UK, to change and to have a vegan majority.
Great, and it is true what you say. I look at multiple media sources daily, and there is always an article on veganism. I can't believe it.
Right.
We're winning.
It's happening. Great. That change, the tide is turning and the change is coming. And, and it's exciting to be a part of and to witness that and to hopefully, you know, see it in our lifetimes would be something special. But we just got to keep going and keep fighting to make sure it happens as quickly as possible.
And all the vegans out there that aren't doing activism, we can push this forward faster if you join us, please.
Yeah, so I think you're most well known for your street activism and conveying that into videos on the internet. You have a very popular YouTube channel with over 106,000 subscribers. Not to mention, I'm always seeing your videos on my newsfeed in Facebook, and then I have to reshare them because they're all fantastic. I appreciate you taking your time and energy to have these conversations about animal rights issues with the public and then sharing them through social media. And I want to play a clip now of one that was just posted last week on your YouTube. It's 15 minutes long, but we're only going to listen to a part of it. And the reason that I want to play it is to demonstrate something that we've talked about on the show before. It's called cognitive dissonance. So let's listen to this clip first. And if you want to find it on YouTube yourself, it's called Basketball Fan on a Mission to Debunk Veganism.
We're humans.
Humans animals. Are humans. I didn't ask you. I said humans
truth,
animals.
Truth.
Humans are humans.
A humans animals. Logos. Yes or no? A humans animals. Yes or no?
I mean, in technicality, yeah.
Okay, so we are animals like a cow or a dog or a cow or a pig.
I am not a dog. I'm not a cow.
No, but you're an animal.
Human.
Yeah, yeah. But humans are animals like dogs and cows and pigs and every other animal.
100% so not true.
So just clarify this. Are humans animals? Yes or no?
Humans. Like, our human species are based off, like, monkeys and gorillas and all that shit. So not dogs. So,
no,
cats,
I'm not asking that. Not that's not what I asked you. I said, are humans animals? So are humans animals, yes or no? Just a yes or no is fine.
No.
Are they not? So what are they?
No. We're humans.
But what's a dog?
A dog. A dog's a dog.
Is a dog an animal?
Yeah.
Is a pig an animal?
Yeah.
Is a rat an animal?
Do I eat pig? Yeah.
I'm not asking you that.
Do I eat dogs?
I'm not asking.
No.
Okay, why not? Why do you eat dogs? Why do you eat pigs but not dogs?
Because pigs are bacon and pigs are ham.
But
and
dogs can be bacon as well. We can cut them
dogs
open and eat them.
What?
But we can do. Why
other countries eat dogs.
Yeah, like in China
like
they do.
Where are we at right now?
We're in America.
What city are we in?
We're in Cleveland.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes, that's
do
right.
Do we eat dogs?
I don't know.
No.
No, but why not?
Because it's a dog, dude. But what are you talking about?
But pigs are a pig. What's the difference?
What is the point you're trying to make?
No, I'm just asking you morally, what's the difference between eating a pig and eating a dog?
Because it's a pig and not a dog.
That's not a justification.
Dude.
Morally, what's the difference between the two animals?
Morally.
What's the difference between two?
Why are you bringing morals into that?
Because when we hurt an animal, or we hurt any human, a non-human animal, whoever, we have to morally justify that action, right? Because there's a victim involved. So how?
No.
So you,
that's
we,
not how.
So
it
we
works.
Don't have to justify harming
no,
others.
No, that's not how it works at all.
Do we have to justify harming
us
others?
As a human species.
Yeah.
Us as a human species need animals to like survive, dude.
Do we? What do you need from an animal product to live? What do you
protein,
need?
Protein. All the nutrients from all that
but
meat.
But can we get
we
protein
need.
From plants?
Yeah, I'm gonna go out into the woods, pick up a plant and eat it.
You don't have to. You can go to Target or Walmart or Whole Greens, right?
There's dude, beans, this guy is legumes. Just as healthy as you are, and right. He doesn't eat animals.
That is
you
so
do.
Not true.
Why is
it's
it not
so true?
True. What's me? Maybe we're pretty much the same, right?
But Audrey, Sabrina.
But this is the thing, right? You can get protein from
dude,
plants.
I know. I get the dude, cause of like hurting like, animals and like chickens. I've seen videos of like all the
right. And it's wrong, right?
Oh, it's so wrong.
Right.
The way they go about it, though.
Okay.
But if they went about it in a different way, I feel like it would be way more acceptable.
So how do we humanely kill an animal then?
You kill it.
But how? How do we do it humanely?
Like you shoot it up with like a shot, no pain involved, just bang dead.
But the animal,
like how they put down like. Say your dog's like super
okay,
sick.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Your dog's like super ill and like you have to put it down. They don't feel anything when
that
happens.
Okay, but why do we do that? Because they're in pain, right? And they're dying. We don't put these animals down because they're in pain. So they want to live their life.
Yeah, but animals are here for us to eat, dude. No. That's just what human nature is.
But why are dogs not here for us to eat?
Dude.
Hang on. So why is it only certain animals but not all animals? Could I harm a dog, a cat, a whale,
dude,
a dolphin?
We wouldn't be here right now if it weren't for animals.
Well, yeah, I agree.
Do not agree.
I agree. But my point now is
we've been living off animals for the longest time. Yeah. Why should it change?
Because we don't need to anymore. I agree there's a time where it's a necessity, but it's not anymore. So we're saying if it isn't necessary anymore, why continue to do it?
But
that's the point. How do we justify it today? What justification do you use today when you buy those products?
Like for meat and stuff, like eggs?
Oh yeah, dairy,
first
eggs,
of all
of it.
It's cheap to eat.
It is cheap to eat. Why is it cheap to eat?
I don't know. I don't know why it should be.
Because of the way these animals are raised, the massive amount of subsidies given by a government, right?
You can have to let go of all that stuff. You just need to leave. What's your name?
Ed. What's yours, by the way?
Tyler.
It's really nice to meet you, Tyler. Yeah, thank you for the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. But for you as yourself, you want to live the healthiest life you possibly can. You want to live the fullest life you possibly can. Why would you worry about any of that stuff? Because you're only here for what? Maybe 100 years?
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be really nice. But you're only here for 100 years. Why would you not want to live your life to the fullest and eat all the foods you can, the good foods? Like, you cannot live without trying a Big Mac from McDonald's.
I ate loads of it, right?
Everybody here has tried a Big Mac from
McDonald's. Yeah, I've tried it, right, right. But the point is, why should I harm others in my life? I have one life, they have one life, so why harm others?
Dude,
so
it's why an take? Animal, dude.
Yes, but where animals
we have a mind.
So do they.
No,
do animals think? Do they have consciousness? Do they experience happiness and sadness and pain?
Walking into the arcade and going to like sleep or like go do whatever that happens in that arcade? No.
No, they go to sleep though.
Because they're animals, dude.
Yeah, but we're animals too.
We are so far above animals.
Why? Why?
Are we, dude?
Why?
Are we two cows like having a conversation right now?
No, we're not. The cows talk to each other. They speak a different language.
We're goddamn humans.
Yes, but why?
Talking in front of the corner alley.
Yes, but why?
And having a goddamn conversation.
But why?
Animals can't do that.
Animals can't do that. So we'll end it there. If you want to hear the rest, you can find this video on Earthling Ed's YouTube page. And it's also on our website at animalvoices.org. Now, Ed, I think this is a perfect example of how many people may react when you're bringing up issues regarding core morals and ways of life that most people have never even thought about before. Cognitive dissonance is the state of having inconsistent thoughts, beliefs, or attitudes, especially as relating to behavioral decisions and attitude change. And I'm sure you've experienced this kind of reaction many times before. So what is it, do you think, that is going through people's heads when they are verbalizing things like humans aren't animals and it's fine to eat pigs but definitely not dogs?
I think there's a huge internal debate going on within these people, because it is that cognitive dissonance. We're trying to justify something that goes against our own morality and our own moral code. And I think there's a little voice in people's heads going, help, help, help. Like, what should I say? What am I supposed to do? Because they're seeing the inconsistencies of their morality and their values being exposed. And that's why I love having these conversations, because you can just ask people questions that help them realize that actually the way they've been living their life mm-hmm. is very different to the way that they preach. And we all preach one thing, you know, we're against animal cruelty. We want to end, you know, suffering. We want world peace. But then 3 times a day, sometimes even more, we're perpetuating the very things that we say we're against. And when that gets exposed to people, they can become flustered. And there's the kind of two ways that these conversations can go. You get sometimes the route where people kind of will admit that they're doing something kind of immoral and hypocritical, but then you get the people that kind of will follow it as far as they can and go to these crazy extents where they'll justify something that just doesn't make any sense. Like, I had this one person who said he was an ethical egoist, which is a crazy idea, but he said that it was fine to harm others because he found it pleasurable for himself. And I said, so if I was to harm your friend right now, would that be fine if I found it pleasurable for myself? And he had to say yes. He said that'd be absolutely fine, because to say no would show he had these hypocrisies in his argument. So people will take it all the way if they have to.
You should have pulled out your machete.
I should have done, right? Held him accountable for that.
I often feel like I'm in a batting machine cage and the ball machine is turned on high speed when people come up with these excuses faster than you can answer them. Do you ever feel like that?
That's a good way of putting it. I've not thought about it like that.
They don't even acknowledge your perfect point in response to what they've said. They just go, yeah, but, and they're on to the next one, right?
It's like canist bingo. It's just like on to the next one as quick as you can.
Oh, yeah. But you know, I've now read your 122-page ebook called 30 Non-Vegan Excuses and How to Respond to Them. So now I feel so much prepared. I want to highly recommend that
book
to people.
Thank you.
You can find that, a link to that, on our website, animalvoices.org. But yeah, do you feel like you're just like slowly peeling like skins off the layer of the onion as you're like going, you know, no one's ever done this before. Like, they have never thought of these ideas before, and you're suddenly blowing their mind. Clearly.
We live unconsciously and we do things without ever questioning them, and consuming animal products is the epitome of living unconsciously. And that's an interesting way of looking at it. People have these barriers in front of them, and some people have more than others, and some people are very defensive about them. But it is kind of like peeling away the barriers and getting through people's excuses and just revealing that deep down, everyone's core, at least most people's cores, you know, we have the same values in common. And I believe that everyone you know, has that veganism in their heart somewhere. It's just for some reason society and culture is has taken it away from them as far as possibly can. So it's just about revealing people's true selves to themselves and helping them understand, look, you feel this way. The only way to live in alignment with that is veganism. And you know, it's a logical and rational thing. That's what I love about veganism, is there's no argument against it. It's just purely logical. It's rational. It ticks every box. It's better for our health, better for the environment, and better for the animals who desperately need saving.
But yeah. you can love animals and eat them, though. What do you say to people who say, well, no, this is a common one.
This is a common argument.
It's a common one that I hear. And what do you say?
I mean, it's good to make those comparisons. Like, would you say someone loved their dog if they beat their dog? You know, if I rescued a dog from a shelter, I said, I love my dog, but every day I beat them. Would you say that? And everyone goes, no, that'd be disgusting. It's like, well, so how can you love someone if you send them to a slaughterhouse to be murdered? Like, I love my family, or I love my friends, or I love my partners. So the last thing I'd ever want to have happen to them is for them to be mutilated, butchered, forcibly impregnated, and obviously murdered. And the contradiction there is, that is one of the most serious contradictions. You can't love someone if you send them to be murdered. It's outrageous, you know.
We'll be back after these messages.
Wave Ranch is pleased to present Vancouver Synthesizer Festival, an immersive experience at the Vancouver East Cultural Center on August 4th. Get absorbed by diverse arrays of ambient, avant-garde, electronic synth, and video-visual artists gathering for this inaugural event and performing live. Performing artists include VWAM, Magnetic Ring, Luke James, Scott MFR, Darvaza's Door, Dynelectric Orchestra, Marilyn Chipman, Emma Tomic, and guests. Tickets $25 and available at The Kulch online. TheKulch.com/events/Vancouver-Synthesizer-Festival.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And we are back. We are speaking with Earthling Ed. He's a UK-based animal activist known all over the world for his engaging and inspiring messages to communicate a more kinder existence for all beings.
So many people who've gone vegan and became activists wind up with strained or even severed relationships with their families and their closest friends. You and I went vegan at the same time, Ed, 4 years ago. I lost my best friend. We were, at the time, I was briefly dating an undercover investigator, and I was telling her everything that he was teaching me, and we were specifically arguing about the chicken industry and the dairy industry. And she said, Jen, cows just have to be milked, and they're all on grassy fields. And I said, I'm just telling you that they're not. I've just shown you videos. I've shown you his undercover investigation of a dairy farm. I've sent you his undercover investigation of a chicken slaughterhouse. How are you still arguing with me when I've given you the evidence? And she goes, I'm not opening your videos. And I said, well, you're not even looking at the evidence and you're arguing with me? That's completely illogical. So you and I talked before the show about how you have strained relations with your family over your veganism. And can you just talk to us about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think one of the most common things that vegans ask me, or indeed anyone, is kind of that thing about, well, how do I deal with friends and family? You know, what is it that I'm supposed to do with them? Because it really puts this barrier between us. And I think it's because we hold our friends and family to a higher level and a higher standard than we do strangers on the street.
Well, that's why we love them so much.
There we go. And we know that they're, well, for the most part, you know, most people recognize that their family are loving and, you know, have good interests and want to have good morals and good values. And we see the goodness in them because we've been raised in them. But then they do something that's so horrific and so horrible and contradicts those values that we've assigned to them. And it's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And I remember I'd been vegan about a year, and I sent, my mum and dad are both divorced and remarried, so I sent them both a separate email, and it was just an email saying, look, I've been vegan for a year. I want to tell you all the reasons I'm vegan because I've not spoken about it before. So I gave a little bit about ethics, a little bit about the environment, a little bit about health, you know, lots of love, Edward. And then I sent it off, and my dad never replied to me, and my mum said I was going to die from synthetic proteins, which to this day I still haven't worked out exactly what they are. But, you know, it was heartbreaking, and it made me really angry for a long time because I was like, how can you be this way? You know, you're supposed to love me. And I just thought my parents would go, wow, Edward, this is a huge thing you've done. Tell us all the reasons why you've done it. We want to hear all about it because we're just so interested because it's your life and you're our son. But that didn't happen. And I tried to rationalize it. And I thought to myself, look, my mum, you know, she's raising me as a single mum for my youth. And she wanted to raise me the best she could with a good set of values, a good set of morals. She wanted to give me the best start to life. And, you know, when I went vegan, I turned around and said, look, the way you raised me for 2 decades is wrong and immoral. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying to her, like, I've gone vegan. I think killing killing animals is wrong, but in her head she hears the way you've raised me is wrong, mm-hmm. and you give me a bad set of values, and that I think that's a really hard thing for a parent to hear, because you know my mom tried to give me the best start, but then I'm saying that she didn't, and even though I don't think that's necessarily her fault, she's you know blinded by society and indoctrination, but that's what she hears. And I think it requires humility and humbleness for parents to change when their children do, but at the same time there comes a point where you kind of have to stop empathizing and just be like, what are you doing? Like, mm-hmm. like this is a huge thing. This is so serious. This is so important. And my loved ones are not changing. Like, and mm-hmm. that's a challenge to deal with. And it does put up barriers. It has in my own relationships where I don't want to go home. You know, I don't spend Christmas with them. I don't do things with them because I know what it's going to be like. And I know mm-hmm. I'm going to get comments and I know people are going to say things and it's going to be, it's going to be hilarious and it's going to be a joke for everyone, except obviously the fact that, you know, I'm aware of what's happening to these animals, whose expense they're joking about. And that makes it difficult. And, you mm-hmm. know, I'm sure, you know, we were speaking before and you have similar issues, and it's a real big problem in the vegan movement where people lose touch with their friends and their family because mm-hmm. there's this huge barrier that gets put in place.
Yeah, I actually sent my family an email as well, and I included all the very important links, such as the documentary Cowspiracy that talks about land use, because my siblings have children and I think they should be concerned about animal agriculture's impact on the planet. And I sent them Earthlings, and I mentioned my journey to veganism was defending animals at the Vancouver Aquarium and then calling myself out for my hypocrisy, eating them hours later. And the only person that responded was my mom, and she's mostly already vegan anyway. But yeah, it's basically don't talk about it with my brother. And my sister, you know, she gives me a warning look if I go into it too much as well, although she's been quite accommodating, I will say. She made me a full vegan birthday lunch last June, so that was nice. But I mean, what you and I talked about before the show is that you can say to someone who says it's your approach that's wrong and that's why I'm not going vegan, you can say to them, okay, you tell me what to say to you to make you go vegan and I'll say it to you and you'll go vegan, right? Because what is happening in essence is people are trying to find a reason to dismiss what we're saying. And so they'll make us wrong. And they'll make us out to be the crazy, stereotypical, angry vegan. And yes, I am an angry vegan. Doesn't mean my approach is always that way. And for anyone who thinks vegans are angry and they don't understand why, watch the Earthlings documentary. And if you're not angry, I don't think you're human.
We should be angry. And I always try to make a big point of this when I do workshops and stuff. And it's like, if you look at the state of the world, it's kind of what you just said then, and you're not angry by it, then you need to wake up, because yeah. what is going on is an injustice of the highest highest scale. And it's so sick and it needs to end immediately. So we should feel angry, because mm-hmm. this needs to end as soon as possible. And the only way we can do that is by getting angry about it and then getting active and doing something about it. And like you said, Jen, it's not, we don't say become angry at the people we're speaking to. We try not to, but the anger is what fuels us to get out there and have that conversation or join that protest or do whatever it is. That fire inside of us is what drives us to bring about that change.
Yeah, and being vegan ourselves is not enough to make the change. We do have to talk about it. So excuse us if we sound preachy to you, but think of yourself in the place of the animals, and I'm sure you would want people screaming from the rooftops and talking to every media outlet you could about your plight.
Absolutely.
Ed, I'm wondering if you can describe just some of the most outrageous arguments that you've heard against veganism, the ones that, I don't know, like just what are the most typical mental blocks that people have when it comes to considering animals, just things that spew out of their mouths and you're like, oh, I can't believe you're saying that, but where are they coming from?
It's kind of the most outrageous, but one of the things that always winds me up is when people say, yeah, but we're carnivores.
And I'm okay.
Like, carnivores, like,
but we're not even
when people think, you know, omnivores, all right, yeah. Like, okay, I'm going to accept that logic for a second, but carnivores, like, where's that come from? Yeah. So that always winds me up. But I think I heard this one the other day. It was a couple of weeks ago, and the person was like, you shouldn't go vegan because of vets. And I said, vets?
What?
Vets? What do you mean, vets? And he said, well, you know, a lot of these vets are employed
to lose their jobs.
Right. Oh, yeah. So they work in slaughterhouses and in farms, so they'll lose their jobs. And I went, so mm-hmm. we shouldn't stop harming animals because of people who say they love animals? Like, how does that work? And vets can work in shelters, and, you know, well, hopefully we won't have shelters in the future, but they can work in veterinarians and help animals that need looking after. And it's crazy.
Do you know what I now say to people that are talking about the jobs that will be lost by people that exploit animals? Do you smoke cigarettes because you don't want the tobacco industry to go under?
Absolutely. This is the crazy yeah. thing. And often, like, people say, oh, what farmers' jobs? I'm saying, okay, but I'm giving jobs to, like, oat farmers and to, like, almond farmers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm changing the farmers who are producing my food. So, you know, why don't you care about the oat farmers for oat milk? Like, why is their life worth less? What about their children and their grandchildren? Like, Perfect. Why do we only care about dairy farmers?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you can give advice about, just in your opinion, what are the most effective tactics to change hearts and minds about the way we treat animals? And do you believe that a variety of tactics are needed to reach a variety of different people?
Absolutely. I mean, I always say the beast that we're against, the animal exploitation beast, is multifaceted. So it has many different layers and many different components to it. So it's not like a one size fits all. You know, we need to have different approaches and different strengths and different techniques to tackle this beast. And, you know, as humans, we're all pretty similar, but we do have different needs, and people won't always be reached with the same form of activism or the same form of advocacy or the same, you know, line of questioning. So we have to be very versatile and adaptable. And I think that's why I don't, you know, I think we should always assess whether or not our activism is effective, but I don't like the sometimes the rhetoric of some vegans were like, oh, this is the best, or this is the only way. You know, there are different forms that are all necessary because people need to be reached in different ways. And there's a lady called Jane Velez Mitchell who runs Jane Unchained, and she said, oh, you know, I was shamed into being vegan. And I was like, oh, okay, like, because people think, oh, shaming doesn't work. And, you know, and for a lot of people, it doesn't. But for some people, it does. And she said, I was shamed into being vegan. Someone had to call me out to my face, call my bluff. And that was what woke me up. So, you know, I think it's very important that we are versatile. And we have lots of different approaches, and we tackle this beast from as many angles as possible, which is why it's great that we should all be activists, because we can all bring something different to the table, and we all have something different to offer. And we don't have to do what others are doing. We just have to do what we can do and what we're good at and what we're passionate about, because everything is necessary and everything needs to be done.
And I like that you say too, we need to speak up even when our voice shakes.
Absolutely, we have to, even when in those times where it becomes uncomfortable, or we become nervous, or it's sometimes, you know, these feelings that we get that want to hold us back. You know, as Jen said before, if we were in that position, what would we expect of those who said that they cared and loved about us? We'd expect them to fight for us and shout from the rooftops about us. And that's what we have to do. So even when our voice quivers and shakes, you've got to speak, and speak the truth, which is what people need to hear.
So, Ed, you are most well known for maintaining your calm, I think, better than anyone I've seen, when you are dealing with these, as I call them, excusitarians. But I want to know what you're like in daily life. When you're at the grocery store and you see people humming and hawing over the most humane version of eggs, which I'm sure we've all seen in the grocery stores, I mean, I'll say to them, they all put the chicks in the grinders, or something shocking enough to engage in a discussion. What are you like when you see, for example, someone walking their dog and they have a prong collar on their dog, or somebody in a fur coat?
It varies, really. I still do sometimes, but I used to, every time I saw someone wearing fur, I'd go up and say something. There's fur collars and there's fur hoods. And walking through London during winter doing that, I'd only ever get about 10 meters at a time because there's so much of it. But we were in the supermarket the other day, and by we, I mean Luna and I, my partner, we were in a supermarket in Victoria, and Luna was wearing a t-shirt, and it was about the dairy industry. It said dairy equals veal. On the back, it said cow's milk is for baby cows. And this elderly couple walked past us, and they said a comment. They went, oh, almonds aren't mammals or something. And we were like, What did he say? So anyway, we followed them around, and ironically, they were buying, you know, cow secretions, cow milk. And so we went up to them. We're like, did you have something to say? Like, did you want a conversation about this? And then she got a bit weird, and she like put her hand and she's like out, and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean. And I was like, no, it's fine. Like, you can say something, but let's have a conversation about it if you want to talk about it. I mean, we're wearing this stuff because we want people to see it, and we want it to have a dialogue. So let's take it. And then she got a bit flustered, and she was like, no, it's just we saw something on Facebook the other day, so we were already talking about it. And I was like, okay, that's fine, but like, you know,
you're famous.
If you want to talk about it, let's do it, you know. And that's the thing. So I always encourage those debates. You know, I'm not going to go around the supermarket necessarily and call out everything I see, because you'd never leave. But at the same time, if there's something, or it's a conversation that's happening that's really just outrageous, then I think it's just chime in, just a little chime in, you know.
Yeah, you can throw in activism into anything, really.
Everything, yeah.
So we normally do a news segment during the show, and we wanted to present a couple of news stories that you could comment on. One that came out last week is that Wales and the UK are set to ban the use of wild animals in circuses. The Welsh government is set to introduce a bill to prohibit the use of wild animals in traveling circuses, according to First Minister of Wales, Carwyn Jones. It will seek an extension to the UK government's draft legislation for an England ban, which is going to come into effect in 2020. So I think this is great steps for the animals. And we were speaking before about just how Britain, the UK, is actually making change for the animals sometimes like way faster than we are here. Can you speak on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful thing, and it's well overdue. This has been a topic of conversation for a little while, and it's good that it's something that's finally going to happen, because it's almost unanimously been supported, but there's just been a couple of MPs in the Commons that have always tried to shoot it down. So it's well overdue, but it does set the kind of benchmark for the way the UK is going. And now we need to get rid of all animals in circuses. I think the drawback is it's only wild animals, and there's a couple of circuses in the UK that use horses and dogs and cats and birds, and that's still wrong and still a form of enslavement. And so we have to address that. But it's shown a great progression. And now there's also been talk in the UK about banning the importation of fur as well, which would mean that we, in the future, very, very, you know, theoretically speaking, we could have a fur-free Britain, which is kind of crazy when you think about it, because it would be such a monumental step in the right direction. So there is a lot of really progressive discussion happening, and the wild animals and circuses is a really great example of what's happening and the direction things are going in. But it's all about just keep churning, keep going. And you know, the public has been opposed to wild animals and circuses for a long time, the majority of the public. And this is the issue, is legislation and governments are always very far behind the consensus of the public. So this is why we have to keep pushing from a consumer point of view and change in society, and not just waiting for laws to come into place, because if the law came into place for this one, it should have done it, it'd been many, many years ago. So we've just got to keep driving, keep changing the consumers, and then governments and legislation will hopefully pick up over time.
Yeah, I can't imagine UK going without fur. That's something. I mean, just even for the ceremonial guard, all those black bear furs that they wear, but there's faux, you can do it, everything can be synthetic.
Absolutely.
So Jen, do you have a story to share with us?
Well, just touching on what you said about the bear fur hats, I wonder if Meghan Markle will be able to make enough change in that she's new to the family. I know she has to be careful, but
do you know her?
Yeah, I know the Queen very well. Yeah,
she's an almost vegan animal rights activist, so hopefully that will change. Anyhow, in other news, at Chalkpaw Expeditions, a sled dog kennel in Ontario, Canada, the dogs that are used for sled tours in the winter are actually left out in the heat in the summer, and it's been documented recently in a film by an activist. It was 100 degrees, and these sled dogs are chained up to a space maybe where they get about, it looks like, 5 feet, and they're there all summer, and all they have for shelter is these cutout barrels that they can go under if they want to. And I watched the video this morning. They're all barking like crazy. There's 200 of them in this dirt lot. I used to live in Whistler, and my boyfriend at the time lived in a ground level suite of a house that was owned by somebody who had a sled dog business, and the retired dogs were what we saw from the patio doors. This was the view. And twice a day, the owner would throw some bones from the butcher over the fence, would never engage with these retired dogs. They were so sickly. And he had a sprinkler going to keep them cool. And that was their life. And I remember seeing these trucks going around Whistler with these tiny metal cages that they kept them in, and you could hear them barking. I worked front desk in a hotel at the time, and I would refuse to send guests on those tours, and I would frequently throw those brochures in the garbage. It would get me in a lot of trouble at work. But anyway, this activist in Ontario has reported this to the SPCA. It doesn't sound like they're doing that much about it. We basically just need people to understand that whenever there's animal use, we need to scratch a little bit more beneath the surface and ask questions about what's going on with the animals when they're not being used.
This is, it's just a general theme of exploitation and use. And you know, we talk a lot about, oh, you know, in Western society we love dogs and we love cats, but actually, you know, and many people still exploit them and still use them and still value their life as lower. So this is just an epidemic of the hierarchical idea that some life has higher value than others, you know, human life, and it is a real issue, and it's something that needs to be addressed. And that's why I think veganism is so important. It's a change of mentality, it's a shift of consciousness that helps us explore the fact that all life should coexist in harmony and, you know, in a symbiotic relationship as much as it possibly can. So it's alarming to see these things, but unfortunately it's not surprising. And until we address the root of the issue, which is this, that very simple idea that some life has higher value, these things will continue, even a society that preaches to love the animals they're exploiting. It's alarming, but it will change. It will.
And this even comes into play when we're speaking about human lives, how some are more important than others. And I want to talk about human rights issues and poverty and how that intertwines with animal rights issues, because I think that all social justice issues are connected. We are presently located right now in the poorest neighborhood in Canada, here in downtown Eastside. Can you speak about the connection between social justice issues such as poverty and animal rights, and how we as a society can be proactive to work towards a better world by keeping all of these in mind?
I mean, the animal agriculture industries, they exploit humans in many, many ways, and especially humans that live in poverty. So if we look at where slaughterhouses in particular position, they're often positioned in areas of impoverishment where people have very low incomes and, you know, and they don't have any job opportunities, and they exploit that by making these slaughterhouses the only available in often, you know, the highest paying jobs in the local communities, and these people don't have a choice. And so they go into a job where they have higher rates of PTSD, depression, suicide, drug and alcohol abuse, and a whole host of really horrible mental debilitating illnesses. And they're expected to just go in and day in, day out, slaughter animals, hang up their bloody overalls, and reintegrate into a society that wants to pretend that they're sick and that they shouldn't exist. And it's horrific the extent of which this exploitation occurs, even to our own species. And this is why veganism, I think, is so important, because it's multifaceted. It's better for the environment. And if we look at climate change, even, and global warming, the areas of the world where it's going to hit hardest first are those which are traditionally poorer, third world countries, less developed countries, you know, traditionally developed countries. The word developed can obviously be very subjective, but it's these places that traditionally have less money and more impoverishment, the ones that are going to be hardest hit. So this is an issue where veganism really also has to be taken seriously, because it's not just about non-human persons, it's about human persons as well, and how we look at our own species. And that shift to a vegan mentality, where, you know, veganism as its objective definition is an abolition of suffering and exploitation to animals, humans being animals, means we also come under that bracket of freedom from exploitation. So a truly vegan world is a world where things like the poverty that we see here in downtown East Vancouver, indeed anywhere in the world, is something that we look back on shamefully and say, how as a society did we allow these things to occur, and how did the people in positions of power simply idly allow these things to continue and be perpetuated worse and worse? And that's why I think it's so important that we drive this consciousness shift as well for veganism, which is why ethical veganism is the default for how we should advocate. Because, you know, a climate vegan, or even a plant-based, you know, vegan, won't necessarily have that consciousness shift, because they're not doing it for the reasons of life and value of life. And for me, systems of oppression are all interconnected in that sense. And to tackle one, it's truly have that idealistic world and that utopia world that we preach as vegans, we have to address all of these different systems that continue to oppress humans as well as non-human animals as well. And it is shocking in Vancouver. I was really shocked by how bad it is here, and something needs to be done about that.
Yeah, I find that really interesting, because we're used to the environment in Vancouver, and you come from a completely different nation where, I don't know, I haven't been to the UK, so that's quite a culture shock for you. It's interesting. Now, you're talking about the climate vegans, and that brings me to a statement that you have on the big vegan activist van. It is, animal agriculture causes 50% of all greenhouse gas emissions. Why did you choose to give that real estate on your van? Tell us more about that.
I think the statistics about greenhouse gas emissions are so incredible, because it goes against the narrative we've been sold. You know, we think it's fossil fuels are terrible. We think it's a car exhausts and engine, you know, engine and vehicles that are causing the problems, but actually it's not. It's the simply the foods that we're consuming that are having the biggest amount of, well, causing the hugest amount of degradation. So I think it's just a really shocking picture and a shocking statistic, because you see it and you're like, wow, this changes everything that I've been told, and you realize just the extent of which we're being lied to. But it's also empowering, because people realize that we don't have to, you know, we're not relying on governments to put, you know, higher restrictions on fracking or to ban fracking, which would be ideal. We're not expecting governments and people in power to change things. We realize that we, the consumer, have the power to bring about the biggest change. I think that's the most empowering thing, because we often feel helpless, and we often look at the state of the world and we see war and famine and we think, what can we do to stop this? But this is a situation where we have so much power just as a single individual to bring about the change that we talk and we hope for. And that's what a statistic's supposed to do, to show that, look, this is a really serious issue. This is an issue that affects us all. The climate is crumbling. We sit on the precipice of ecological disaster, but we are the ones that can bring about that change and save the planet and save the species of animals who will obviously be affected negatively from the destruction of our environment. So it's empowering, I hope.
And, you know, touching on that, we often hear from the excusitarians, as I call them, mind your own business. If you want to be vegan, you be vegan. And here's a prime example of how this is everybody's business. And something else that's everybody's business is antibiotic resistance, which we are already suffering from. This is an epidemic. And a lot of people don't understand that. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
this is one of the most terrifying things that we face as a species, and it's so severely underreported and under-talked about. And yeah, we are entering now into a post-antibiotic era, which means that the antibiotics that we use, the penicillin, you know, the drugs that we're given, even we have, you know, dental surgery, hip replacements, all these things will in the future be redundant and not able to be used to help us. So we're going to enter back into a time where we can't even cure the bacterial infections and stuff, which is, if you think about how much of a regression that will be and how many people, well, in fact, I saw a statistic that said by the year 2050, antibiotic resistance will be a bigger killer than cancer, right? Mm-hmm. And that is horrific. And it's because in the US, over 80% of the antibiotics that are sold are used in farmed animals. In the UK, it's 50%. So we have all these antibiotics and we're feeding them to farmed animals to keep them alive just long enough so that we can then murder them and then give ourselves cancer and heart disease and type 2 diabetes from consuming their flesh. So we are all going to pay the price of our arrogance and lack of action today, both from the climate, but indeed just from basic illness that we take for granted as being able to be saved from today. Decades down the line, who knows, you know, what problems we're going to face. We have to do something about this immediately because it's not going to go away, and we're being warned about it, but people have to change. I'm terrified by it.
I actually had a friend who almost died because antibiotics weren't working on him. He had an abscessed tooth, that's all it was. And he's been homeless ever since that long 6-month hospitalization because of all the complications that resulted from losing a job, from being in the hospital for that long. Ironically, he is completely opposed to oppression in almost every aspect of his life, except he defends eating animal products and promotes them on his Facebook page. I find that so strange. And I have spoken to him about antibiotic resistance. This is something that we need more ad campaigns on, because if you ask anybody why we have antibiotic resistance, I've even asked doctors and scientists, friends of mine, they'll say it's because we take too many when we're sick and we don't need to. That's not the case.
No. Speaking of ad campaigns, Ed, if you were able to have a billboard above, I don't know, Buckingham Palace or in that area, and it could say anything you wanted it to say, what would you have on there?
Wow, that's an incredibly difficult question. I would say, I mean, wow, that's really hard. Something to do with, do you value taste over life? Something bold, picture of an animal. Do you value taste over life? It's got to be something that makes someone question it. Sometimes statistics can be a bit heavy. Just a question that gets people thinking, I think. So something like that I would probably go for.
Yeah, I like the Vancouver Humane Society bus ads, which you might see around the city. And I think it says, there's a photo of a child with a little piglet and saying, it says something like, "We once all had compassion."
Wow.
And I think that's profound. It makes people think.
That's powerful.
Right? It is powerful. And everyone will see it when they're driving behind the bus. And it's been going on for months.
I've
like
seen
that.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, a couple last questions to wrap up with. Are you wearing your cow tag today?
I'm actually not. No, I'll be wearing it tonight at the screening.
Okay. I always see you wearing your cow tag, 4848. I memorized the number. Can you tell us the significance between of what this tag represents?
So the tag that I wear was given to me by my friend who runs Barcelona Animal Safe. So she bears witness at slaughterhouses in Barcelona in Spain. And she, from this murder house that murders cows, she got a tag for me, a tag for my partner, a tag for herself, and a tag for our best friend. So we all have these tags that were belonged and were given to the cow, and the tag has a barcode and a number and shows just how much we have taken the individual out of the animal and how we've just reduced them to this number, to an object, to property. They're commodified, and I think it's just a powerful thing because people see it, and people always look at it when I'm wearing it, and they kind of just question a second. I don't know, they just see it and they're like, what is that? And it creates conversations because it's a strange thing to wear. And you know, and sometimes it's kind of, I always feel a bit bad sometimes I have conversations with vegans and we'll be like having a really nice conversation, I'm like, oh, tell me about the tag, and I'll tell them, then they'll like be like, oh,
they get all sad.
Yeah, sad, because it is sad, but it's a reminder of why we do these things and why we have to act, because when you think about the individual that belonged to that tag was, you know, was put onto, when you think about the fact that they suffered, and it's about, you know, seeing the billions of animals who are just like that cow who had that tag, who are suffering the same way today and will be in the future if we don't act. And it keeps me grounded when I'm doing events, because it reminds me of why we have to do what we do.
And what do you say when someone says, but I'm just one person, I can't make a difference? What is your advice for people who want to make change for the animals, but they are stuck and they don't think that they will be effective?
So I like to think of like a big pond. And I think that you have one drop goes in the pond, and it's just one single drop. It goes in the pond, and then there's a ripple that occurs, and that one drop creates a ripple, and that ripple creates another ripple. Then you have this huge ripple that occurs, and that started from one drop. And in essence, we are that one drop, and every conversation we have forms that ripple. And then the people we've spoken to and turn vegan, they speak to people and turn the vegan, and they do the same. And all of a sudden, this one person who just simply started having conversations about the veganism has had a huge effect on the landscape of the pond by creating this ever-growing ripple effect. And I think that's how we have to view it. That, you know, sometimes we look at the world and we can feel like we can't make that difference, but actually one person, you know, can change a thousand minds, and the ability that we have to create a profound effect should never be underestimated. Because every time we go out there and we protest, we go to a vigil, we go to a cube, whatever it is that we do, every time we do that and we strike up a conversation, we do something, we're changing people's lives. And the effect of that, we won't ever really be able to comprehend, but it exists. So empower yourself to know that we have that change. You know, this movement has millions of people, but there's millions. Everyone's an individual in that movement. Everyone's an individual. And we require individuals to change and empower themselves to create more and more millions and millions of vegans.
So where does that leave us? Where do you see veganism and society's perception on how we treat animals going in the next even just 5 years? Are you foreseeing a world with justice, compassion, and equality?
I hope so. That's what I'm thinking about. That's what I dream about, because that's what gets me up in the morning to keep going. I know it has the capacity to happen, but it'll only happen if we do something about it. The next 5 years are going to be big. There are many challenges that we're going to face. You know, that there is you know, rising consumption in certain areas of the world. You know, so it isn't sometimes as easy as looking at statistics and going, this is a done for battle, we've won, because there are contradictory statistics from other areas. You know, like across Asia and China and places like that. You know, there's a huge vegan scene growing there. So it's about humbling ourselves. So we've got to be grounded. We've got to be aware of what's going on, but also remain optimistic and hopeful. So the next 5 years are going to be massive. We're going to see huge changes. The dairy industry is going to be gone in our lifetimes, I'm sure of that, and hopefully all the other industries will crumble around it as well.
Well, thank you for that. So for people who are listening, there's some people who are watching on our Facebook Live. We have our event with Earthling Ed tonight, hosted by Animal Voices in Liberation BC at UBC Robson Square. We're going to be showing his film Land in Hope and Glory, and Ed will be doing a talk and a Q&A. So that's a free event. It's happening at 6:30 p.m. at UBC Robson Square. Can you tell us about any other plans that you have for the rest of the week where people may be able to get in touch with you in person in Vancouver?
Yeah, so there's a talk tomorrow night as well. I don't remember the details, but it's with a lady who runs an animal protection.
Animal Protection Party of Canada.
On Saturday, there's the chicken vigil as well, Vancouver Chicken Save, which I'll be at as well. So if please come along to that.
8 a.m. to 11.
That's the one. And I know there's a cube happening Saturday afternoon, but I won't be able to be there for that. But Saturday morning for the Chicken Save, please, as many of you as possible, come along to that, because it's such an important thing to do.
Okay, and I'll post the event. I'll post both of those events for the Wednesday night as well. You get a free dinner for that, so come to the event. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, you get a free catered plant-based foods dinner.
Perfect, then. Okay. Oh, well, that's good food.
I would, if I was in town, I'd be there. So thank you so much, Earthling Ed, for coming on the show today to speak with us about your work in the animal rights movement and making change for the world for justice, compassion, and equality for all beings. You can find Earthling Ed on his YouTube channel. And remember to also look up the Land of Hope and Glory film, which is available free on YouTube. You can also visit earthlinged.com and the Big Vegan Activism Van.com. Enjoy the rest of your time in Vancouver, Ed.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our show next Friday, August the 3rd, we will be featuring an interview with vegan psychologist Claire Mann. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Go to animalvoices.org and you can stream or download our shows there as podcasts. You can also read our show blog there with detailed links, and you can subscribe to us via iTunes. Stay in touch with us on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We also have a YouTube page. It's Animal Voices Radio. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So I'll be closing today's show with a song that I feel embodies the theme of our messages today and the message that I hope to convey to all of our listeners, which is be the change that you wish to see in the world, as once said by Gandhi. Here's the song Be the Change by Luminaries featuring Trevor Hall. And stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for being kind to animals, and tune in next week. Oh,
سروداروم سروبنه آواتار وریشتایا راما کریشنا یتی نمه
Yes, I. This song is called Be the Change. It's about the words of Mahatma Gandhi, who lived for peace and not violence, and told us to be the change we wish to see in the world. Freedom's calling, I feel the fire that's deep inside us. Everybody wants change, but tell me who will guide us. To the leaders that pass away, put up your lighters. It's a beautiful struggle, but it cannot divide us. We're the ones that we've always been waiting for. See yourself in the mirror and open up the door. Walk through it and feel the love throughout your pores. Be the light, life's purpose is to feel joy. Metaphysical, lyrical, setting up the truth. The only one to make change is walking in your shoes. Be the example, don't complain about the news. Making music and serving the world with the loo. Now you can be the same, or you can be the change. Find strength from inside, break through the chains. No one to blame, nothing to prove. You create your reality, it's up to you.
Be the change that you wanna see in the world. Like Gandhi lived for peace,
aspire to be.
Someone who fights for the beliefs, like Martin Luther King,
aspire to be.
That love,
that light,
like Christ,
live right
for the moment in need.
And if you believe
in Jehovah,
Allah,
Buddha,
Krishna,
it's love to me.
My soul yearns for peace in a world that's flooded with war. History's littered with bodies scarred, trying to settle the score. To maintain an archaic platform of power and greed. People fight for land out of survival and need. So I'm killing my television and I'm planting a seed. To fill my head with knowledge that I'm seeing received. Due to the media propaganda killing my creed. Oh, what don't kill me make me stronger, feeling strength when I bleed. Fight for interest before it's attached to feet. They try to sell you anything in this world, nothing for free. Land, air, fire, and water, they keep up in the ante. While the anti-proletariat told the powers to be. But we keep fighting, surviving and thriving. Recycling and rhyming, we constantly inclining. We see through the lying and blind. They tactically keep trying to keep you from asking the why.
Be the change that you wanna see in the world. Like Gandhi lived for peace,
aspire to be.
Someone who fights for the beliefs, like Martin Luther King,
aspire to be.
That love,
that light,
like Christ,
live life
for the moment in need.
And if you believe
in Jehovah,
Allah,
Buddha,
Krishna,
it's love to me.
We find solutions, different possibilities, creating organizations like Aspire to Be, inspiring young minds to see, building life skills, nurturing creativity, fulfilling the youth's basic needs, listening actively, teaching the tools to succeed, positive role models we plant to see, the roots drink the water which feed the trees, someone help me, giving back is my responsibility,
be the change that you wanna see in the world, like Gandhi lived for peace,
aspire to be,
someone who fights for the beliefs, like Martin.